been too long. Always a pleasure. Nate Edwards, Rock Am Nation. What's up, man?
I'm trying to get my frequent flyers back with you. I'm never going to catch up with everybody else, but boy, I'm going to get there eventually. Really happy to be back here, man. Always excited to talk to you.
Yeah, and we were joking off air. Could be a disappointing, well, I don't know if disappointing is the right word, but average year for Missouri. But is it fair to wonder if maybe without the weight of expectations that have been there the last couple of years, it certainly seems to me like Missouri delivers when you're not expecting it. Could that be the case?
Oh, man. You know, you're right. The worst thing Missouri can operate with is expectations. And I am certainly doing my part to tamp down any sort of excitement. I did a 6-part series on why Chip Lindsey sucks, our new offensive coordinator. I've been questioning what we're doing in the portal and our high school recruiting strategy. So I'm doing my part to keep expectations down. No, I mean, look, it's the portal era. We've seen it before. You get a couple of key additions that maybe were overlooked or just needed a new place to blossom, and they take off and you win 10, 11 games. It's happening. You know, Indiana, you know, last year was really good, and then they got great with just some key additions there. So it can happen, but it's just really tough to tell, you know, especially with change of scenery with, you know, college age kids. You're never exactly sure what that's going to look like. And so you look at what does stay the same, right? Your head coach, you know, if he stays the same, your coordinators, if they stay the same. And, you know, as a Missouri fan, you know, I'm going to trust Corey Batoon to put out an awesome defense that's aggressive and competent and maybe gives up a few big plays, but, you know, is mostly good. And then, yeah. You got Chip Lindsey, who I think stinks really bad. So I don't know what we're just going to keep the expectations down, and you know, maybe we'll be happy with 8 or 9 wins. How about that?
Okay, well, you've jumped ahead. You've already mentioned him twice, Mr. Chip Lindsey, friend of Eli Drinkwitz. We got all this money. We're going to go get a big time coordinator. What you may know better than I, but I remember didn't he say something like, "We're going to go out there. We're going to get someone with SEC experience." You know, we've got all this.
He did, yeah.
And then he hired Chip Lindsey. So, again, you did a fantastic breakdown, Rock Am Nation, not only looking back at each season he's had as a coordinator, but how that stacked up to last year's Missouri offense, which is the reason that we've got a new offensive coordinator. So, can you lay it out as best you can as to what you found when you were researching Chip Lindsey?
Yeah, you know, I knew his reputation as just like a Gus Malzahn product, right? It feels like he goes in every interview and goes, Gus Malzahn, and they give him the job. And I just kind of viewed him from afar as a fail son, right? Just a dude that like 2 years here, 2 years there, just kept moving. Now, he was a coach at Troy for 3 years, so I'll give him credit for staying there, but he's the first choice Troy coach since 1991 to never have a winning season nor win their conference. So, like, okay, we'll just throw that to the side. The issue that you come across with Chip Lindsey is that he's not super creative. He loves the ground game. Okay, that's cool, just like Gus did. But every offense he gets to, like, every once in a while, they would get a little bit better. Like, if they had Jared Stidham at Auburn or if they had Drake May at North Carolina, that first year, you'd see a little bit of a bump. But then that second year would hit and they would regress every single time. And then he's gone. And it's like, well, what the hell did you do here, man? Like, he had Drake May, and Drake May, you know, was in the Super Bowl. I don't care what happened in the Super Bowl. He got this team there with a bunch of 1-year rentals. He is an excellent quarterback, certainly an excellent college quarterback. And Chip Lindsey saw that and said, I'm going to run the ball. That's what I'm going to do. So Drake May's pass attempts went down. His scrambling went down. The offense got worse. And then he goes in the NFL and it just, the thing completely collapses. There's not an offense that Chip Lindsey has made better. He has inherited some cool pieces and done something differently, but he's never like looked at it and said, okay, if I take these pieces, I can do this, this, and this. He has never done that. And the problem, to your point, is that Eli Drinkwitz stood in front of God and country and a bank of microphones and said, we have to improve the passing game. We have to. And he knows this because Greg McElroy, of all people, openly criticized the passing concepts that Missouri had on national TV and said, what the heck are you guys doing? You're not even running protected routes. So he knows what the problem is. He knows, Eli Drinkwitz knows what the problem is. He has more money than any Missouri coach in the history of the program had to go find a coordinator who could address that. And he picked Chip Lindsey. And I forget the analogy I use in the piece, but it's like you're given $50,000 to buy a new car and you bought an 09 Camry. Okay. Is it going to get the job done? Yeah. Could you have done so much more? Also, yeah. So I don't know what the thought process is. I will give him credit for nabbing Garrett Riley out of Clemson as a quarterback's coach. I'm hoping and praying that this is like a passing game coordinator situation where, you know, Garrett's like, hey, what if we did some competent pass routes? And then Chip Lindsey goes, okay, cool. And just, you know, calls the plays and schemes up the run stuff. But it is not an impressive hire. Any hire can work. I understand that. But historically, this hire tells me that our offense is going to regress. And I don't want to be right, but history says that I'm right, and that sucks.
Yeah, and again, not to be a Debbie Downer, but it's not like we've got 2 or 3 years of data of him as a play caller on offense. It's 9 years, I believe. So, yeah. I mean, this is anything over three is a trend, a strong trend. And to go with where we've been weak is kind of where he's weak. Again, maybe lightning will strike or something, but it's kind of bad that that's kind of what you're hanging your hat on. You know what?
It is. When your roster is turning over 60% of its guys every year, you have to look at the consistency. And this is the second year that Missouri is getting a new quarterback. Second year that they're redoing their offensive line. They got brand new receivers. Like, there's a lot of churn here. And you're hoping to look at your consistencies and say, okay, well, at least I can rely on X. And there isn't that. Not only because you lost your offensive coordinator, but the guy, your head coach, decided to just go right back to the thing that he knows best, which I get. You got to win as many games as you can. There's no leash anymore in college football. So, like, if you're getting paid $11 million to do something, you are going to do it the way that you think you know how to do it. Like, you go to your safety place. I just don't understand why he stood in front of us all and said, here's the problem, and then didn't address the problem. That seems weird. So he must have some kind of idea, a Garrett Riley, I guess, to fix the issue. But, you know, what he said and what he did doesn't line up. And the consistencies aren't there. And there's really nowhere to be found on this offense. And we saw what an inconsistent offense can do last year. And now we're doing that again. And now the defense is resetting. Man. All right. That's fine.
And add an extra conference game on top of it.
Nine games now. Yay. Awesome. Oh, hey, you like Texas A&M? Let's play them every year. Oh, great. Awesome.
You mentioned Garrett Riley. I believe they previously worked together. I can't remember if it's Appalachian State or NC State, but again, it's another familiar guy. Mm-hmm. And we all remember, hey, he was at TCU. Remember they went all the way to the national championship game. That's what I think of when I think of Garrett Riley. And then I saw, Nate, your analysis of his history, and it was like, oh, I guess that was the outlier.
It was. It's so weird. Like, all these Drinkwitz, Malzahn guys are like really conservative passing concepts and just run the piss out of the ball. But, you know, to his credit, he was with Sonny Dykes for 3 years. Those first two SMU offenses were not explosive pass plays, but they were explosive overall. So, like, they had the guys who could make big plays, which that's all you're really looking for. And, of course, TCU was the outlier of outliers because it was like a bunch of sixth-year offensive guys were like, let's just run fast, and they did. And they hadn't been doing that under Gary Patterson, so everyone was kind of caught off wrong-footed. So that was really the big explosive offense that he had, almost overly reliant on explosive plays, which you saw what happened when Georgia took that away. But then he gets to Clemson, and I can't decide if, like, the Clemson Garrett Riley is what he's used to or if he had a Dabo Swinney restrictor plate on what he was doing, because it was all short passes within 10 yards. It was all like, hey, go create yak. Hey, we're doing a lot more running. Like, the success rates are up, but like the yards per pass are down. Like, it's the same thing that we've seen at Mizzou. It's the same thing that Eli Drinkwitz is doing. And I hope that Garrett Riley has had exposure to like really creative passing concepts and knows how to implement them and will be given the green light to do so. I can't imagine he'd take a quarterback's job at Mizzou without the ability to you know, participate in like the scheming, but I don't know. And he was just fired. I don't know if he's like tainted goods or whatever, but he is a competent coordinator. He has done it before. And I'm just really hoping that it's a melding of minds. And it's instead of like, oh, we're going to get one guy who can make it better. It's like, we're bringing in a bunch of guys to make it better. But again, history doesn't really point to that except for that one season. And that makes me sad.
Well, hey, maybe there is some optimism though with quarterback Austin Simmons, because I think you can argue he may be the most talented quarterback Missouri has had since maybe Drew Locke. These people in Oxford, they were trying to tell me what an incredible player he's going to be for them. Now, he didn't quite showcase that. And of course, we all know what Trinidad took control and the success they had. But that was a curious move, I thought, to add Austin Simmons at first. That was my opinion. But the more I think about it, you know, he's not going to be asked to be the savior necessarily. They're always going to lean on that ground game, and they've got outstanding running backs. They have a quality offensive lineman coming back. So I think the situation sets up well for Austin Simmons to come along a little slower. What's your thoughts on Austin Simmons and that theory I have there?
I could see it, especially since Ahmad Hardy and Jamal Roberts are coming back, and you know, you got to feed them. You know, the thing about Austin Simmons is that, yeah, everybody in Ole Miss is like, oh man, this is like the greatest quarterback since Archie, you know, like, okay. And like, you see glimpses of it, but again, it's kind of like the Bo Prabula ad last year. And you're like, well, we haven't seen a lot, so it can kind of be anything you want it to be. You get a decent idea of what it could be. The one thing that I'll give Drink credit on here is that I feel like he's had a pretty good run of identifying good quarterbacks. If you rewind the clock, he wanted Jaden Daniels on his team, who ended up at LSU and won the Heisman. Then he wanted Fernando Mendoza on his team, who ended up in Indiana and won the Heisman. And he really pushed hard for Austin Simmons. Like, he's like, all right, I've been beaten twice. I am putting the money here. I am getting my guy. He identified Simmons fast, and he got him really fast. So I think he's got an eye for quarterback talent. But then my question is, okay, so what was Austin Simmons told? Because we know Austin Simmons likes to throw the deep ball. He likes RPOs. He likes, he likes winging it. And that's not something that a Drinkwitz offense has done before. So did he tell him that's what we're doing? Did he tell him, hey, we're just going to bring you along in year one and let Hardy and Roberts do the work, and then we're going to uncork you in year two? Like, I don't know what those conversations are. I don't think he would have done that. I'm sure enough money, you can do whatever you want, but I don't know how they want to use him. And we got burned a little bit by Prabula not quite being ready for the big time. And I don't know. I want to trust Lane Kiffin knows quarterbacks, and like, he picked him first for a reason. But also Lane Kiffin just makes quarterbacks look good. So there's a lot of unknowns about this. I like your theory. Hey, be a steward in year one, and then we're going to unleash hell on year two. I think that's cool. I also don't know if that's something that a college quarterback wants to do. And we've got some pretty speedy receivers that we got out of the portal, and it's like, well, we should probably use them with the big arm quarterback and the fastest receiver on the planet, apparently. So I don't know, Mike. Like, what are we doing? Everything that we're getting screams big play, but you're doing it with a bunch of people who don't like that. I don't know what this is going to look like.
Well, I think it's I may have figured it out, Nate. I think they took that money that they were going to hire a coordinator. They spent it on Austin Simmons. I mean, it all makes sense, doesn't it? Austin Simmons,
and it's got to be it. Man, you've cracked the code. That's how we're doing it.
Let me ask you, what's the bigger question on offense? Is it quarterback or receiver?
Ooh. Well, I can't say both. Man, receiver is another just big old question mark. You lost Marquise Johnson. We lost Josh Manning. Both of those guys are going to be entering their fourth year. Real bummer that they're not going to have that experience. Also, I don't know how hard they fought to keep those guys, so I'm going to kind of keep my commentary on that to myself. They do have Donovan Olugbide, probably one of the more exciting young receivers in the SEC, so maybe that's all you need. But then you bring in, you know, Caden Lee from Ole Miss, obviously the Austin Simmons connections there. Did good in that system. How is he going to do here? Caleb Goody, school number three in 4 years, super fast, terrible catch rates, like 50-55%. So, okay, so we're just going to throw it deep and every one or two you'll catch. That doesn't seem to be a very good, reliable target to have, but it's interesting. Yeah, Kenrick Lanier out of Minnesota, who's just, what is it, 9 targets and 4 catches over 3 years. Okay. Nayshawn Montgomery out of Florida, redshirted last year. Okay. It's you got the freshman class from last year, like Sean Terry, who's super fast, but we don't know what he does. And then you got a bunch of transfers, which you kind of get an idea that Caden Lee is going to be like a Luther Burden, Kevin Coleman replacement, but then a bunch of other stuff that you're not totally sure what that's going to be. And, you know, with the passing thing, you know, if you go to Bill C or just kind of any advanced metrics, like experience with throwing the ball, both in quarterback and receiver, experience is the most important factor. And you, there's just a lot of young guys and they haven't played together for very long. So, you know, you might have the biggest arm in the world in Austin Simmons, and I actually probably feel better about him than I do about the 5 guys that he's going to throw to. But then again, maybe you can just chuck it to Donovan and Lugbide and, you know, 20 times a game and call it a day and probably be okay.
Mm-hmm. Well, will the defense be okay after replacing, I believe every starter is gone. Now, in years past, that'd be a death sentence, right? But with the portal and everything, you could kind of shore that up. But it would be foolish to expect the same level of production. So, what's your thoughts, Corey Patoon, what he'll field this year on defense?
He is going to find 11 guys to play. I feel really good about that. He'll probably find 11 guys to play behind them. I feel very solid about that. It's really interesting their portal theory this year. It felt like they targeted like years available over like impact talent or, you know, super high potential out of high school. It felt like they really gravitated towards, here's a guy who's got 2 to 3 years to play, you know, or maybe has been to a couple schools before. They didn't really make a super splashy addition. Robert Woodyard out of Auburn, obviously big name. Like, okay, I will give him credit for that one. That's cool as hell. But you needed a lot of reinforcements on the defensive line, especially once Damon Wilson out of nowhere kind of chose not to come back. And you replace him with a fifth-year JUCO guy, Malik Bryant out of Miami, who's got, you know, 197 snaps over 3 years. Kevon Thule, who has is a defensive end in name and has never played defensive end at the college level. And CJ May, who redshirted last year. I'm like, okay, so that's what we're replacing Damon Wilson with and Zion Young with. Doesn't seem like that's an instant, like we're swapping out one for one, good for good. You know, defensive tackles, you've got a bunch of young guys around the depth who in theory are ready to play, but you only really added one guy when you lost three. And two of them were starters. I feel good about the linebackers, but our defensive secondary got a hard reset. They replaced our three corners all with one-year guys. Chris Graves has 1 year left. Jaleel Florence has 1 year left. Sione Lalea has 1 year left. So we're going to have to do this all over again next year. And then from the safety core, you added a couple of guys who have 2 years left. And okay, like if this just screams bridge year to me. We got a crappy coordinator who leaves in 2 years. We got a bunch of defensive replacements out of the portal who will be ready in a couple years. You got a quarterback that, you know, you're going to pay an offensive coordinator salary and keep him around for 2 years. Like, it just feels like this is a huge, okay, let's focus funds. Let's get through this year and push in 27. And if that's the case, then cool. They're never going to come out and say that. But it's just interesting how they've targeted big splashy additions in the portal previously and only really did one or two this year and focused more, especially on defense, with multiple years of eligibility left. It's just, it makes me notice things, and I don't know what that means, but I'm curious. I'm curious.
And I apologize, Nate. I should have came a little bit better prepared and have this stat on the top of my head, but I was thinking while we're talking here, because you did an extensive work on Drink and his statistics in a number of metrics. And I am going to ask you about one, but do you recall the statistic? Because this was going around late in the season where like Drink is like and I may be totally off on this, but I think it's like 2-12 or 14, 2-14 or something against teams with winning records in the SEC. Did you see that stat that was going around?
Oh boy. Well, I did a pretty deep dive on his situational record this week at rockhamnation.com. If you SEC folks are interested in reading about Missouri, it ain't good. You know, his road record is about what Gary Pinkle was and a little bit better than Barry Odom. So, you know, just to say that that's bad. But, you know, on the road, he is 10-17 against teams that are ranked higher than him in SP plus. He's 9-24 against teams with winning records. He's 17-24. And when you're looking at like the top 10, like SP plus top 10, he's 1-12. So, you know, the SEC is lousy with those types of teams, really talented teams on the road, ranked. Those are hard games by nature. There's going to be very few coaches who have good records against that, but he has noticeably struggled. He kicks your ass at home. Like, you don't beat him in Columbia. You will beat him on the road. And if you're ranked, it's not looking good for old Drink.
But he is 11-3 versus rivals. That's a stat you had there. So, I mean, I think that's pretty damn impressive. But one thing I did want to highlight, and just what do you read into it? The fact that over 57% of his ranked wins came in 2023, I mean, that kind of suggests it's a little bit of an outlier, right?
It would, yeah. It would. I would agree with you. And none of them came last year either. Look, whenever I do these stat dives, I will get one of two camps saying something other, like, "Oh, Drinkwitz actually stinks." Or, "Oh, you actually hate Eli Drinkwitz." I'm like, man, just pick what you want to believe, pick a stat, and then go with that. Like, you're going to see what you want to believe. There's no coach that's perfect out there. There's no secret, like, "Oh, well, he always wins every game after a bye week." Like, you're not going to find that. You're not going to find a perfect coach. You're not going to find a coach who has like a secret sauce on how he wins games. You just hope that he puts out the best roster and like things click every once in a while, like they did in 2023 when he got all those ranked wins and a couple of road wins too. Those are some good ones on that one. That's what you're really hoping for. Situational records are fun, but maybe you can make it more telling than you want. But in the end, you know, you just at Missouri, God, win 7-8 games a year and you've got a job for life. Pull a couple upsets too, please. Maybe get a 10 win here or there. But yeah, I mean, we're not going to spin as much as everybody else. We don't have the history of everybody else. And yet here we are. We have like the fifth most wins since 2012 or something like that. Hey, not a bad place to be.
No, not at all. I did want to ask you this. I don't know if you can see this, but I just put out national championship. I put out the graphic. Ooh. I didn't make these odds. These are courtesy of FanDuel. But I have another theory here that I wanted to throw your way, because I thought I was pretty stunned that at four in particular, Florida 50-1, Auburn 65-1. Of course, John Summerall, new coach at Florida, Alex Golish, new coach at Auburn, and those are either the same or better odds than Missouri and Tennessee, and why I highlight those, and again odds. This doesn't accurately reflect the actual, you know, odds to win it all. In my opinion, it's a lot of it is, you know, where the money is and things of that nature. But do you think it's fair to say that maybe Florida and Auburn fans are excited and maybe putting money on their teams because, you know, there's belief there, whereas specifically Drink and Heupel, where I think both those guys are really good hires. Better hires than any of the recent hires those schools have made, but I would say both those fan bases are like, God, are we ever going to win anything with this guy? You know what I mean? Is it fair that Missouri is, because to me that's laughable to say that Florida, and I think Florida's going to be good this year, and I think Auburn's going to be better this year, but to think Auburn and Florida have better odds than Tennessee and Missouri, that's laughable to me.
Yeah, I mean, they got the new car smell.
Yeah.
You know, neither Summerall nor Golish has lost a game at their school. So, you know, they got that going for them. Also, it's Florida, man. Like, just feel like a coach change here or a couple of pieces there, and they're going to make a run. And we've been saying that since, you know, 2010. Does it make sense? No. I feel like most betting markets are wildly interesting and come up with some weird numbers anyway. I do think, to your point, though, I mean, I think the only fan base who hates Tennessee more than Missouri is Tennessee. I can't think of a single time of some Tennessee social media presence has said something nice about the Vols. Maybe they will after Joey Aguiar wins his court case. God, it's so wild. But, you know, it is, there's a risk of complacency. There is a, hey, you pulled us out of the muck. Now what? What's the next trick? And if you don't do that, especially at a place like Tennessee that has championship expectations, then yeah, the clock starts ticking, man. I don't, you know, for Mizzou, I always like, hey, we should, I don't think we need to pull out the pitchforks too quickly. And I think most of the fan base believes that. It gets stale and you see the same thing again, and yeah, the players change and you're like, oh, I don't know. I do think Heupel's great. Now, he was a coordinator in Mizzou for 2 years and great offenses. Yeah, that was awesome. But yeah, you know, quietly he's made Tennessee competent, especially on defense, especially with the run game, and given his, you know, his reputation, you're kind of surprised that he can do that. But no, I think Tennessee is a consistent power, you know, routinely probably going to be in the top, you know, top third of the SEC, as long as Heupel's there. And for Missouri, we're just going to be lurking, man. Like, if the schedule shakes out right, we'll probably win 9-10. You know, if not, we'll probably win 6 or 7. 6-7, that's what my daughter always does. You know, it's never going to be awful. And if it's never going to be good, then you're just kind of in this purgatory, which sometimes is the worst place to be in sports. But no, Heupel and Drink, yeah, doubt them all you want. They'll jump up and get you.
Do you sense any, from the Missouri fan base, any sense that, man, we really missed a window these last 2 years with the schedule and the talent and everything that, because it, fair or not, it, which I hate this, to be honest with you, but this sport now is quickly becoming like, have you made the playoff? And if not, nothing else matters, which I don't believe. But I think a lot of people kind of are that way. Do you sense any of that from the Missouri fan base?
I mean, I sense it within myself. I think the fan base shares some of that. There's two windows you can talk about. You can talk about the first mover window that Missouri created with NIL, getting very aggressive, setting state laws, and really for 2 to 3 years giving themselves an edge in recruiting, high school recruiting specifically. And then the second window would be that schedule window that I think everybody points out, like, oh, what an easy schedule that is, which is still an SEC schedule, guys. It's not, none of these are easy. There are easier versions, and I think Missouri got one of the easier versions in 2024 and definitely 23-24. So yeah, I do feel like there's kind of a window miss. And I do think even the staff probably thinks that too. You know, they pushed their chips into the middle of the table twice. They really broke the bank for impact additions in the receiving core. They thought they had it at quarterback, but certainly on the defensive line, like, they really made some big splashy moves to go, no, we are winning 10 games again this year. And they did that in 23. They did that in 24. They did that in 25. It worked two of those years, won 8 and 25. And I think, you know, I'm telling you, these moves, I don't know, I can't read their mind. But when you hire a career 2-year coordinator and you're getting all these multi-year guys who can, you know, came in assumingly cheap and will probably stay around, it tells me they're like, hey, we got to figure out what this 9-game schedule's like. We got to figure out what we can do and what the SEC is going to provide us. And once we figure that out, you know, then we can start pushing and like, okay, now we got experienced players. We can just add some pieces here, make a run there. You know, you got to be strategic at Mizzou. You can't be in Ohio State. You can't be in Alabama where you just go, oh, all in all the time. And nor is there a push for that, but it's just, there was a window. And before all the craziness and lawsuits and realignment happened, they had it. And they took advantage of it from the stance that they won more games than they usually do. But no, they did not get into the playoff. And I agree with you. The playoff is fun as hell. I love it. At its core, College football is about regional rivalry and sticking it in the eye of the guy that you work next to and tell him that K-State sucks, if you're me, if you're a Big 12 guy. That's at its core. That's what it's about. And we shouldn't lose sight of that. You still want to be in the playoff, but you got to embrace the regionality of it because that's what makes it special.
Yeah. Well, hey, and then let me ask you one question about the schedule for next season. If there is, and you know, you could easily probably say Kansas. I don't want to lead you anywhere, but is there one game, and I know it's way early, but is there one game that kind of will define the season for Missouri next year?
Ooh.
You know, like
road trip to Kansas is going to be big.
Yeah.
Not that they're going to be very good, but I would say to define Texas A&M in a good way. Like if they lose that, it doesn't really mean anything other than it's just kind of another 8-9 win year. But if they beat A&M at home, I'm listening.
Right.
I'm considering, you know, readjusting my expectations. A first-year Florida squad on a summer roll, yeah, they're going to be good. I don't know if they're going to beat Mizzou good. Mississippi State, I'm not super worried yet. Well, you can clip that and play it in a couple months. but if they beat A&M at home, I'm now paying attention. And then if they go to Ole Miss the following week and beat them, absolutely, I'm paying attention at that point. But God, look at the back half. Look at that. Texas, Georgia. No, Kentucky, but interesting Kentucky, and then Oklahoma. Like, boy, that's Eli Drinkwitz plays really well in November. He's got a pretty solid record in November. That is that's gonna be tested this year for sure.
Right, I mean, you just never know what you're gonna get, particularly in this age of college football with the turnover. But I think there's an excellent chance that Missouri starts that 4-0, and they'll be undefeated by the time, you know, that Florida and A&M come about. So those will be huge games. All right, last two things for you, Nate. Is there a portal addition? And let's look outside Austin Simmons because I think that's a little obvious. But is there a portal addition that excites you the most for Missouri this fall?
Oh, absolutely it does. And, God, I don't know how your listenership is going to react to this, but I am dead serious. Mark Shenouda, the punter from Tennessee State. Oh my God. He's not Dickinson. He's not the Texas kid that punted New England to hell in the Super Bowl. But that dude, oh my God. He has got like an 82-yard punt or something like that. His average is well over 45. And the reason that I'm actually serious about this is that Eli Drinkwitz Bowl absolutely requires a dynamite punter to get them out of a jam when they inevitably screw up and get stuffed three times. We had that for a little bit. We had a Kentucky kicker, Grant McInnes, who for 2 years, including 23, was able to punt us out of really bad situations and put opposing offenses in really bad field position. And the field position battles were something that Mizzou consistently won in those few years where we had McInnes. And we've been trying to get back, you know, chase that dragon, get back to that high since then. And we have just whiffed on punter the past couple of years. Mark Shenouda, man. Oh, I am so excited to see him punt that ball because I know he's going to, and I know everyone's going to give me grief for it, but I'm telling you, you know, Florida fan, Texas fan, Georgia fan, when you're playing Missouri and you're like, oh, we're starting on the three again. Just remember your boy, Nate, told you back in February, Mark Shenouda, punt assassin.
Nate, I swear, we've been doing this show, I believe, since 2018.
Oh, yeah?
You are the second person to ever bring up a punter on the show, and the only other person to do it, I believe it was Clint Lamb. He covers Alabama. I was asking him before the 20 season, you know, what is the lone weakness for Alabama? He said he had to think about it for about 10 seconds. He said, I think it's punter. And Alabama went 16-0, won the national championship. So if history's any indication, Missouri may just go undefeated thanks to that answer from you. All right, last thing, Nate. Biggest storyline that you'll be watching for Missouri this spring?
This spring? Man, what are we going to do with Austin Simmons? Are we going to uncork the boy, let him cook? or is this going to be another plug-in and like hand it off 50 times and call it a day? I am really excited to see what kind of offense they want to roll out, and we won't really see it in spring, but just bear with me. I want to see what they want to do, what differences are made, and what receivers are we trotting out there, because I don't know any of these guys' names or numbers, and I can't wait to see what that's going to look like.
All right, Nate, thank you so much for the time. Before you go, can you tell the audience how to follow you and how to find your work over at Rockham Nation?
Absolutely. RockhamNation.com, your source for Missouri sports. All of the sports, we cover it all. I do football. I have great, smart writers who cover everything else. You can follow me on Twitter at Nate G. Edwards. And, of course, you can follow the podcast. Mine is called Before the Box Score. It is on the Rockham Radio Network, where we go, again, over all the sports, but the football one is the important one. That's where you can find me.
All right. Thank you again, Nate. And I'll put a link in the show notes to all the articles that we referenced from Nate. They'll be in the show notes. So if you want to follow along or go check them out, that's the best place to do it. But thanks again, Nate, and good luck this season.
Thank you, sir. We're going to need it.
All right.